offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. As always, joining you from our studios at the Sri Satsai Media Center, we are Prem and Arvind, and we are in the process of going through the old issues of Sanatan Sarthi. We are in the first year of Sanatan Sarthi, 1958, to be more precise. We are in the first few months. It's a very beautiful and nostalgic journey where we not only get to read articles from the past, but we also get to follow Swami on his tracks. As we've seen in the previous episode, we went through the period where I think it was the March of 1958 when Swami was in the city of Madras. Earlier, he was from Bangalore, I think, went to Madras, and we followed the various things that Swami did there. Swami participated in a celebration and inauguration of the Mandir at Perambur, one of the earliest samitis, you could say, from the city, and the many discourses that Swami gave. Swami gave a discourse, I think, in a place called Gokhale Hall, and then Swami gave a discourse at the YMIA, the Young
Men's Indian Association
in Malapur. There Swami gave a discourse. And apart from going through whatever Swami, whatever Professor Kasturi has documented in Sanatan Sarthi, we also went to the Satyasai Speaks and we got a few notes of those discourses. Very interesting, because you could imagine early years, 1950s, I think Swami is also has not given as many discourses. You know, when we say divine discourse now, the idea of what we have as a divine discourse is completely different. The setup that we've seen, a couple of speakers before Swami, and Swami would rise and speak and there would be translation. I'm not sure whether these discourses had live translations like we have seen. In fact, even some of the discourses in the 60s, the translation used to be almost paragraph-wise, not line by line. So when we say a discourse, it's much different. And as we are seeing in the Sanatan Sarthi, some discourses were given at 8 o'clock in the night, some early in the morning, some in the afternoon. So it's new for even the people around Swami, some of these discourses. But as we can see, the message is eternal. The message is changeless. The message is point blank, if I could put it that way. And that's one of the things that we've had the pleasure of following as Swami is going through these various avataric actions.
Welcome, dear listeners, and as always, it's a pleasure to join in the Thursday satsang. When Prem, you were speaking about the early discourses, I was just wondering what was possibly Swami's first discourse. According to Professor Kasturi in his book Loving God, he says the first ever discourse was delivered in 1953. And the content of the discourse is interesting, but Professor Kasturi says till then Swami would come and sit on somebody's bedroll. Swami will walk into some group and just, it was all informal talks. He said, for the first time, Swami said, all of you gather around, I want to tell you something. And everybody gathered around and formally Swami spoke. So that was a discourse which didn't have any translation. It was an uninterrupted flow from Bhagwan, and Swami spoke in a formal setting. And it was in that discourse, I think it was the Vijayadashmi day. I'm definitely sure it is the Dasara of 1953. Possibly the Vijayadashmi day, the final conclusion day. And Professor Kasturi records that Swami said for the first time that his life would be divided into phases of 16 years. The first 16 years would be Leelas. And Swami said, now you are seeing Mahimas, because this is the 16 years of Mahimas. After this 16 years get over, I will start Upadesh. But don't worry, the Mahimas and Leelas will continue throughout, but my focus will be Upadesh. And in his autobiographical book, Professor Kasturi records that it is only the compassion and love of Swami that though it is the Upadesh phase is slated to begin in 1958, which is the Sanatana Sarathi beginning, which we have discussed in the beginning of the series, he says that out of his immense love and compassion, Bhagwan started off in 1953 itself, because that is the first formal discourse that Swami gave. And as Swami made it very clear, which we discussed last week, Swami said in the discourse that whenever I travel to get to know about how my devotees are. I am not here to talk about, to listen to my glory being spoken. I want to know about the problems of the devotees and solve it for them. Because in that discourse, Professor Kasturi and there's a certain Ramnath Reddy whom Swami refers to by name, saying that this Ramnath Reddy and Kasturi are speaking only about me. No, I want to know about you. again, interestingly, I'm unable to contain myself because in Professor Kasturi's book, there is a mention of this Ramnath Reddy. Now, apparently, this Ramnath Reddy's name was T.A. Ramnath Reddy, and he was a road engineer. And that's why Swami used to call him Tar by his initials, you know, T.A.R. Tar is his initials, and he's also a road engineer. So, this Tar, he has one very interesting experience, I think, which is again connected to last week. We were mentioning about how a group of youngsters from Telangana came and they worked and for the General Hospital building when Professor Kasturi felt that they were taking too many liberties with Swami.
Right.
And Swami said, I'm going to go with them to Telangana, but since you don't like them, you don't come.
Right.
So during that visit, what happened is apparently Professor Kasturi stayed back in Prashanthi Nilayam, and after a few weeks, they heard no news about Swami. There was no mobile phone those days. So telephone calls had to be booked because his interest across the state, and no letters came. So Mother Ishwarama was very, very worried. So she called Professor Kasturi and I think Raja Reddy, who had just come to Swami by then, saying that, you know, you both go and locate where my Swami is. Definitely Raja Reddy had come because we have seen already his articles are
right in the article in the Sanat and Sanat.
So she told them, you please go and find out how Swami is and send me a letter about his welfare. So that's how Professor Kasturi and Raja Reddy set out to Hyderabad. At Hyderabad, they got to know that Swami had gone to the state of Maharashtra, you know, from Telangana. Mm-hmm. Telangana is the northern part of Andhra Pradesh, and further north is the state of Maharashtra. And Swami had gone to the world famous Ellora Caves, which is near the city of Aurangabad. This Ellora Caves is a cluster of about 100 caves. Only about 30 of them are open as of today. The interesting thing is, these caves are dedicated to Hindu deities, Buddhist worship, as well as Jain worship.
Mm-hmm.
And it is of great interest to the world today because it is symbolic of the kind of unity that existed in India among religions. Even to this day, I think India is possibly the only country where so many religions reside. Of course, there are conflicts and there is a little disharmony, but I don't think any other country can boast of such an equitable distribution of so many religions. So Swami had gone to visit those caves. It is amazing. You know, it brings in us the interest to for ourselves to visit the caves. And as Swami was coming, Swami returned to Hyderabad and Swami tells Kasturi that, you know, this Tar, that is T. Ramnath Reddy, he didn't sufficiently fuel the vehicle and midway in the journey, we ran dry.
Mm-hmm.
This had happened on a couple of occasions before. I think we have discussed in our Satya to Sai serial, wherein Swami at Mysore took water from a fountain,
right,
poured it into a vehicle and had it running. Interestingly, Swami tells Kasturi that, you know something? This time there was no pond and lake and rivers also on the way. As if like, how do I run the car then? Mm. And then it was Ramnath Reddy who confessed that, you know, Swami just wheeled the car and the car moved on an empty tank. So even putting water in the tank is just a leela. Swami doesn't need anything. And after this, Swami accompanied Professor Kasturi and Raja Reddy back to Puttaparthi. And Professor Kasturi recorded that Mother Ishwarama was so excited and delirious in joy. She said, I only asked for a letter. You have brought back Swami only. I am so grateful to you. I am eternally indebted to you and all that. But the name Ramnath Reddy, which Swami mentions in the discourse at Madras, which we discussed about last week, just triggered this beautiful episode, and I thought it's worth recollecting and mentioning here.
Beautiful. I think the habit of assigning names to people started way, way back, isn't it? I mean, as you had seen, I think even in the 40s, the first two small girls who started singing songs, Swami used to call them Patul Ammai or something like that.
Yes.
And Swami had always had that habit of, even till when we were students, we know that Swami always had names for different students.
This Miran Mohinuddin was called Prasadam Bhakta.
Prasadam Bhakta. And of course, in our times, we all know pakodas and coconut trees and giraffes. All kinds of names Swami would call. And that was a very beautiful way, because there will be so many Sai Krishnas, Ramakrishnas and all that. And it was Swami's way of identifying that, you know, you stand out and I recognize you. And that was a very endearing thing that Swami would do. Coming back to the early editions of Sanatan Jati, we are in the April issue. We have not yet completed that. We did a few of the articles. One of the articles that finds place in this issue of Sanatan Sarthi is written by one Mr. C.S. Ramaswamy. It's completely on the practice of meditation. Of course, much later we are going to have Swami's entire exposition on meditation, the Dhyanavahini. This is an article, as we have said, these are all articles which have been approved by Swami, and Swami had a very clear editorial policy of what should be published. Swami said it has to be based on spirituality, and it should be based on practice. What you have practiced and derived benefit from should what must be written about. So clearly, if Swami has permitted this, C.S. Ramaswamy, to write an article on meditation, maybe a person who has been practicing the sadhana or meditation. So many of the points that he mentions are things that Swami often says, speaks about. Swami speaks about, he speaks very highly about meditation. I think that also is an indication of the fact that he must be practicing it. You know, oftentimes when you practice something, you tend to speak more about it, or you tend to quote unquote market it more.
But it naturally becomes endearing to you.
Endearing to you, right? And I mean, there's nothing superfluous in what he says. Whatever he says, as we said, is mentioned in Swami's discourses later. He speaks about the concept of how the three have to merge. That's something that Swami would often speak about, the dhyaya, dhyana, and the dhyata. Swami would say that only when this merger happens, it is meditation. Till that point, it is only effort towards meditation or practice of meditation. True dhyana is only when this happens.
Till then, it is possibly only concentration or
more contemplation. Right.
In fact, he, as you said, he speaks so highly of it. He says that dhyana is almost like Atma Nivedana, which is the final, ultimate step in the Navvidha Bhakti Marga. He also says that it finds a very high position in the Ashtanga Yoga of Patanjali, because I think Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. So it is one stage before Samadhi, before the ultimate merger. So he speaks very highly of it. And then he says about the two kinds of Dhyana that can be done. He says one is the Guru Upasana, where you worship your God, chosen deity, or your Guru. And again he says this can be either with a form or without a form. So you can meditate on your Guru in the form or in the formless way. And this was Bhagwan's first message to mankind as well, which said that, O mind, manasa bhajare guru charanam. O mind, meditate on the feet of your Guru. So this is one kind of dhyana, which he says, which is Guru Upasana. And he says, or else you can do mantra upasana, where your meditation is based on a mantra into which you have been initiated into. And again, fondly recollect how my father once showed me a 1 rupee note. He said that was the note given as Dakshina to him by Swami when his Upanayanam was done. Nice. When your Upanayanam happens, you are supposed to start life as a Brahmachari, in which begging, you know, you humble yourself, realizing that you are living at the expense of society. So you beg, and first you beg from your mother. And my father said that on that day, Swami said, see, there are some boys here who don't have a mother. So they will feel left out. That is why the first bhiksha today Swami will give standing as the Divine Mother. After that they can take bhiksha from anybody. So when they stood, Swami gave bhiksha of the rice and this 1 rupee note, and whispered a mantra in each person's ear. And the only difference is Swami said this mantra is universal, you can share it. So for my father it was Om Shri Sai Ram Jai Ram. So a mantra is usually given as an initiation and it's supposed to be highly secret. But our Bhagwan is so compassionate and loving, any mantra that he gave, he opened it up for all, whether it is the Gayatri mantra or the Om Shri Sai Ram, whatever. So, Mr. C.S. Ramaswamy says that the other kind, other than Guru Upasana, is the Mantra Upasana, where your meditation is based on a mantra.
And, of course, we don't want to dwell too much into this meditation, because we've been speaking so much about it in the other series that we're doing, the conversations with Heslop. Extensively, Swami explained about meditation, especially about Jyoti meditation. And quite recently, I think we had those two sessions by Brother Bishu and Amai on meditation. So for those of you who have not followed that, I think that's a good satsang to look at.
On YouTube,
where they have covered most of the points that Swami speaks of on meditation. Mm. There's also a beautiful guided meditation on Jyoti meditation. And we saw how Swami has said that There is no other form of meditation that is required. This is the simplest. And Swami has put it out there saying that you don't need anything more. This is there. But very beautifully, Swami told Hislop that those who want to try anything else can try, and eventually they'll come back to understand that this is the simplest and easiest. So that's a short plug for that. Those two videos which are out there, and the guided meditation video, if any of you are interested. Then there's a small portion in this particular issue where he speaks about Swami's visit to Venkatagiri. And I think that also must have become a very common practice in those years. 1950 is the first time Swami goes to Venkatagiri, I think. 48 yes. is when Venkatagiri Raja comes to Prashantanilayam. 48 is when...
He has darshan at Bangalore.
He has darshan in Bangalore, and then he comes to Parthi for the inauguration of the Bukkapatnam school.
School.
If you're not right, if I'm not wrong. And correct. Then in 1950, Swami goes for the first time to the palace of Venkatagiri.
Interestingly, again, you know, because as I said, recency effect, loving God, it is Professor Kasturi who is sent to give the, what do you call that, the chief guest, mm-hmm. the chief guest address. The king is also coming, and Swami says that he has got a special portrait which will be unveiled at Bukkapatnam school, and Swami has got the whole school rebuilt. From those days only, Swami, Professor Kasturi writes about Swami's deep attachment to the youth. In fact, he writes that in 1949 for birthday and Dasara, mm-hmm. the Bukkapatnam school, Swami said, till my pillalu come. You know, the pillalu concept started at that time. He himself is a pillalu. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a 25, 28 year old. But he's saying, till the children come, let's not start. And Professor Kasturi records how all these VIPs come. Those times the VIPs were the royal families.
Right.
So some 8-9 cars would come to Puttaparthi, and they would come via Bukkapatnam, because that is the route. So once they come and drop off, Swami will call them and tell, send your car to pick up my children. And Swami himself apparently had one Plymouth car or something in 1949-50. And Professor Kasturi records how Swami would go to the banks of Chitravati and sit in the groundnut field waiting for the cars to come with the children. And to them Swami supplied band instruments and everything to play. So that is the school, yes. I think it must have been partially financed even by the Raja of Venkatagiri.
Right. Mm. So that's his first visit. And after that, I think Swami goes quite regularly to Venkatagiri. And in fact, Swami, I think, makes it a point to be at Venkatagiri without fail during the Ramanavami celebrations. Because Raja of Venkatagiri is a very, very devout bhakta of that form of divinity. And Swami also gives him darshan as Lord Rama. And there are some experiences of that. So this is one of those trips, and Venkatagiri, if you look at it, it's quite close to the city of Madras. It's about 3 hours from Madras. That's okay. What I figured out, and that's why, you know, what Bangalore is to Puttaparthi, I think Venkatagiri was to Madras. So whenever Swami would go to Madras or roundabouts, Swami would always, and I think the route also comes in such a way that you can make a quick visit to Venkatagiri and then proceed towards Puttaparthi. Mm. It's on a short detour, not much. So I think that's why whenever Swami's visit to Madras comes, there's also a short visit to Venkatagiri also along with that. So this was one of those visits like that where Swami was spending Ramanavami at Venkatagiri. The 29th of March was Ramanavami in that year, so Swami was there. And there's a short description of what Swami did there. At around 5 p.m. on that day, Swami visited the high school there. And there was a discourse that was delivered there. Unfortunately, that is not documented in Satisai Speak, so we don't know much of what Swami said there. But from what Professor Kasturi mentions, it was a discourse to the children. So Swami was mentioning about how important it is to acquire a good character along with whatever education, secular knowledge that one is gathering. And Swami also distributed scholarships to students, needy students in that. Then I think later that night, this was around 5 p.m., later that night at around 8 o'clock, Swami gave another discourse, but this time it was in the courtyard of the Venkatagiri Palace.
Hmm.
Right? And that discourse was a Ramanavami discourse, where Swami spoke about the significance of Ramanavami.
In fact, when you said those annual scholarships, Swami set it up, got it established.
Okay.
He gave out, and from then on, every year, 5 scholarships would be given. So it's evident that right from that time. You know, Swami's message and Swami's whatever Swami has come to establish has not changed. Even as a youngster, he had the attachment and bonding with the youngsters and the children especially. Then the next day, the 30th of March, Swami inaugurated a new block of buildings, which they called as the poor house. Possibly this was used for Narayan Seva and, you know, Vastradhanam and all that. So, a set of buildings, especially for that, earmarked for that purpose. So, that happened on the morning of the 30th of March. And on the in the evening, once again in the same palace quadrangle, Bhagwan delivered a divine discourse on the Sanatana Dharma, on the ancient Bharatiya culture and traditions. Once again, there is no detailed discourse recorded. So this was just the subject of the discourse. The next day, the 1st of April, Swami took a number of scholars and priests and shastris to the riverbed. And on the riverbed, they held a long discussion. And I think later on, Venkatagiri kingdom also, later on, or Venkatagiri kingdom had become famous and popular for that, wherein all the sadhus and sannyasis would meet. It was regularly held under the patronage of the king. And I think it was a few years earlier in one such sadhu meet that Swami Sadananda and Swami Sachidananda of the Rishikesh
Divine Life Society.
Divine Life Society were very, very mightily impressed with Swami. They spent a lot of time with Swami. And they invited Swami to come over to
Rishikesh,
and that is how Swami visited, I think, in 1956 or 57, Swami visited the Shivananda Ashram.
Right.
So, Venkatagiri Kingdom was actually a very fertile breeding ground and, you know, growing ground for scholars and sadhus and shastris, because the king gave a lot of patronage to them. So, I think as part of that, there was a discussion on the...
No, definitely. I think that must have been one of the reasons why Swami was so fond of the king. Because both Venkatagiri, we know the two of the royal families which Swami was, which had a long association with Swami, Venkatagiri Raja and the Prince of Jamnagar, the King of Jamnagar, Rajmata, who later was very close to Swami. Even he was known for that patronage that he gave. We've spoken about that Digvijay Dwar, which he had built for the Somnath Temple. He was one of the royal families that contributed immensely for the reconstruction, and Swami had gone to inaugurate that, and that was when Swami visited Jamnagar. So I think many of these royal families were very close to Swami because of that service that they had done, because as Swami said, Veda Poshana and Vidvat Poshana was part of his avataric mission, and clearly I think that was one way in which they had won Swami's heart.
In fact, when you mention the Jam Sahib, there's also an account of how he is the one who first supported the Parsis, who actually migrated under, when from the Middle Eastern areas,
right,
where they were being troubled, they came to seek asylum.
Also, he had studied for a very brief period in Poland as part of his early education. And during the Second World War, I think he had given asylum to a lot of Polish refugees who had come on a steamer. And they were not being allowed to, port anywhere else, because they tried in all of the Gulf areas. Mm-hmm. And finally, when they came, and when he got to know that they've been trying, he sent out his ship and saying that, you know, please come here, we will take care of you. And I think for a very long time, early 1940s, till the war was over in a few years, he had taken care of all of them, and then he had sent them back to their land.
These kings today, extremely rare breed today, but they stand for what the Bharatiya culture is all about, welcoming to all live with the feeling of brotherhood of man and fatherhood of God. And that is the reason why whether it is the Parsis, the Zoroastrians, all of them have found refuge, and they have important place of pilgrimage in India, because India welcomed with open arms whoever wanted to come here. We happened to mention this in the beginning, and as you rightly said, these two kings, the Jam Sahib and the Raja of Venkatagiri, embodied this aspect of Bharatiya culture, and it is not surprising, therefore, that Swami visited them often, or, you know, Swami was very happy with them, spent a lot of time with them.
So that, I think, concludes the May issue, or April issue of Sanatan Sarthi, and I think we'll take a quick break, dear listeners, and we'll go to the next issue. And for reasons you will see, these issues become shorter and shorter, in a good sense. We will come to that, but we'll take a short break and don't go away. We'll start with the May issue of 1958 Sanatan Sarthi after this bhajan.
Welcome back, dear listeners. As Prem said, we will now embark on the May 1958 issue. For us to discuss in the afternoon satsang, with the limitations that we had already given as a disclaimer right in the beginning, that is, we will not be covering Swami's articles because those articles have become Vahinis today and the Vahini satsang is a separate satsang. From May 1958, Swami has started contributing two articles. It started off with Prema Vahini in the February 1958 issue. But now Swami also starts the Sandeha Nivarini, which is very, very interesting because it is a dialogue between a spiritual seeker and the master. And Swami has written the dialogues of the spiritual seeker as well as the master. It's so beautiful and definitely we will be covering it in a separate satsang.
Actually, it is, to do it. Even as we are doing it in the evening, there's a Sandeha Nivarini satsang that's happening.
Oh.
And that's the last segment of Thursday Live. So those listeners who are interested, Prema Vahini has been completed and Sandeha Nivarini is going on. And it's really interesting because even as we're going through the Sanatana Sarathi, you're seeing how much Swami is traveling. And generally, I mean, if you put yourself in Swami's place, you'll feel that this is good enough. Right? I'm contributing one article a month, you know, that is good enough. And this is on top of the number of discourses that we're hearing. On a day, Swami is giving two discourses. In a trip, Swami is doing 4 or 5 discourses. Added to that, the number of letters that Swami has writing to devotees, it's beyond count, you know, especially 50s and 40s. So many letters Swami would write to so many families. On top of all of this, the interviews that Swami is giving, Swami is entertaining the devotees who have been coming with interviews and with whatever offerings that they bring. Swami decides to write one more article for Sanatana Sarathi, and it's really remarkable. And that's the reason, as Arvindo was saying, that's the reason why the rest of the content of Sanatana Sarathi becomes lesser, because now almost one half of Sanatana Sarathi,
more than a half
is with these two articles, the Prema Vahini article and the Sandeha Nivarini article that Swami has written.
And because, you know, they had a very strict editorial policy wherein you write only what you have experienced and what you are practicing in your day-to-day life. So, in the beginning, I think people were very hesitant. As we have seen so far, articles are only by Mr. Tar, Professor Kasturi, Raja Reddy, all those who are, and there's also one Kondal Rao.
Kondal Rao, right? And one Ramaswamy.
Yes. So, these are the people who have, I think they were in the inner circle, or if at all there was something like the inner circle was so huge, I think. They were day in and day out with Bhagwan, and I think Swami must have told them, you write, and they would have written. It's only, I think, later on, as months go by, slowly other contributors also start coming in. But till then, there's not, mostly it is Swami, a couple of devotees, and Professor Kasturi. So the one half of the May 1958 issue is the Prema Vahini and the Sandeha Nivarini. There's an article that Professor Kasturi writes. Every issue, there is an article, there is a contribution from Kasturi. And in this edition, he has done a recap of Swami's Uravakonda days. We have to keep in mind that this is the time when the Satyam Shivam Sundaram has not yet been released. And Professor Kasturi, who has been told by Swami in the first interview of his life, second time that he is meeting Swami. Swami directly tells him, you will write my Jeeva Charitra. It is phenomenal in Bangalore. And ever since then, Professor Kasturi is greatly humbled and he starts collecting material. So it looks like he has been collecting material, and whatever he has collected, just like, you know, while you are doing a PhD, you publish many papers
in between, right?
And all those papers are all part of your PhD. So it looks like Professor Kasturi's PhD was the Satyam Shivam Sundaram, and all these articles have come in. So he writes about Uravakonda, and possibly we will not go into much depth there because we have covered it extensively in our video serial called Satya to Sai in multiple episodes. In case people are not aware of it, you can go to the Shri Satya Sai official video channel and there's a playlist called Satya to Sai in which as of now there are 36 episodes covering Bhagwan's life from birth till the historic letter that he wrote to his brother Shesha Maharaju in 1947. So in that there are a few episodes on Swami's days at Uravakonda, right? It, you know, the entire declaration of avatarhood drama happened there. I say drama because Bhagwan is a divine director and divine actor. From the scorpion bite to the torture at Kadri to Swami throwing flowers which shape out as I am Sai Baba, finally culminating on the 20th of October where Swami says, I am, you know, my devotees are calling me, I am no longer yours, throws away his books and sits on that rock, gives the message, Manasa Bhajare Guru Charanam, all that Professor Kasturi covers in quite some detail in the article. The new thing that possibly is not covered in the Satya to Sai is Professor Kasturi mentioning that in 1955, when they were returning from Hyderabad, they had a stopover at Uravakonda and Swami's home there, the rock on which he sat and sang Manasa Bhajare, the school, all these, by the way, are still there for us to see at Uravakonda. Swami was the guide and he took Professor Kasturi and the others around and showed them all this. So it must have been a beautiful experience for them. And it is possible that Professor Kasturi was recollecting that and he got nostalgic and he decided to write an article on that. So that is one article that appears in this edition, a recap of Swami's days at Uravakonda.
And the other thing that one has to always keep in mind is what these articles would have meant at that point in time. In the 1950s, not only devotees were reading Sanatan Sarthi, definitely Sanatan Sarthi would have also traveled. If I was subscribing for Sanatan Sarthi, some neighbor would have borrowed it from me and read, or I would have found it interesting and given it to a colleague in my office. So many of the people would be getting glimpses of Swami's early life and Swami's childhood at that time. And of course, now we are saying childhood. 1958, it was barely in a couple of decades back, less than a decade, couple of decades back. So definitely, at that time, these were all not available for anybody else. Most of the people would have been hearing this for the first time, Swami's declaration or what happened in Swami's school days. And all of that would have been really something that people would have looked at and said, oh my God, this is amazing. So for us, we're looking at and saying that, oh, we have covered this in much, much more detail than he has written in the article. But one can just imagine what it would be to read this in Sanatan Sarthi.
Absolutely. Going ahead, there's a very beautiful poem called Do Not Lose Heart. And the author writes, it's so beautiful, there's nothing we shall discuss. Possibly we'll just read it. The author's writes that it starts with a very, very common way in which we address each other here as brothers and sisters. So it goes like this. I'll just read out the poem. Brothers, do not lose heart. The night is long, but the day shall dawn. Saints and sages show the way. Remember the promise that Sai gave. Look at me, I shall look to you. Think of me, I am with you. Self and pelf hold sway and keep at bay the righteous holy way. Therefore lead kindly light, lead us on to the right, thou art the guide and the light. We cannot for long prosper on the tears and tragedy of others. All are children of the Lord, let not power blind your eyes, let not prosperity deafen your ears. Never treat anyone with disdain or cause him any pain. Feel his presence and pray to him, we know not when we reach the journey's end. Very motivational poem, especially if one is going through a difficult time or a tough time. It's very encouraging to read this, and definitely it has touched the editor's heart, that is Professor Kasturi's heart, and that's why it has been included in the issue. So this is one poem that finds its place in the May 1958 edition of the Sanatan Sarthi.
The other article that was written by a name that Arvind also mentioned, Kondal Rao. I think earlier issues also there were a couple of articles by him. So in this issue, he writes an article about destiny. Again, a topic we just covered, karma and destiny. The line of argument that, of course, he presents is the concept that karma theory is leads some people to think that it's world. There's nothing much to do. The fatalistic approach, as they call it, to life, that everything is destined. If I have to be rich, I'll be rich. If I have to be successful, I'll be successful. There's nothing for me to do, and there's nothing that can be changed by our action. So almost the entire article is contesting that view, saying that whatever we've discussed, that there is prarabdha, that is what we refer to as destiny, but there's always a choice, there's always one can work towards how you handle that destiny that comes to you. So that entire thing is spoken of. I think the entire article is about challenging that fatalistic approach to the karma philosophy.
In fact, he writes that it is not fatalistic, it is not meant to depress, it is meant to encourage and enthuse, saying that since everything that you are receiving is nothing but what you have done already, you can do something now, you can, so that you can change your present and future. In fact, he says that a defeatist outlook is because of a diseased mentality. And he says that it has kept many Hindus, because Hindus meaning those who believe in this, it has kept many Hindus in tamas. You know, Swami would often say that you should not fall into tamas, instead you should do tapas. So he says that it has kept Hindus in tamas, meaning inaction. And he also writes that the Hindus in India have possibly even missed material prosperity because of this wrong interpretation of karma, saying that I am poor because I am meant to be poor, and it makes them stop putting any effort. He says, no, please do not mistake prosperity as a kind of spiritual defeat. And he writes there are many wealthy and prosperous people who are also very spiritual, so wealth has nothing to do with spiritual uplift or being down. It automatically doesn't mean that every poor person is spiritually advanced. It doesn't mean that every rich person is spiritually bad. So he says, you should, in fact, he gives the example of, he says there are many other physical laws of physics. And karma is also a law like that. He's almost implying that, so suppose there's a law of gravitation which says that you can't leave the Earth's boundaries. Instead of getting defeated by that, you know, this is not as per se there in the article, but this is what he's implying, that when there's a gravity that is going to keep you on Earth, you put in extra efforts to blast into outer space and overcome gravity. You overcome the law of gravity to go to that. Same way you should approach the law of karma. Yes, it works like any other law, but you should struggle and strive to break through and go beyond. And he gives the example of the Mrityunjaya, which I think is Markandeya. And he says, you can overcome karma by knowing with this great knowledge that you are the spark of the divine.
Right. And he concludes that article with a very interesting poem. It's a famous poem. I think many of the listeners might have heard of it. At least I've heard a few lines from it once in a while being quoted, especially when speaking about the importance of hard work and importance of positive thinking, optimism. So the line goes like this. He quotes it as a Persian poem, so it must be a translation. It goes, if you think you are beaten, you are. If you think you dare not, you don't. If you like to win, but you think you cannot, it is almost certain you won't. If you think you will lose, then you are lost. For out of the mold we find, success begins with a fellow's will. It is all in the state of mind. If you think you are outclassed, you are. You have got to think high to rise. You have got to be sure of yourself before you can even win a prize. Life's battles don't always go to the stronger or the fastest man. But soon or late, the man who wins is the man who thinks he can. A very beautiful poem. And by the way, talking about that poem, the previous poem, it is written by one Mr. Venkateshwarlu. So apparently, I think he's one more contributor to Sanatan Sarthi who has been blessed by Swami himself.
The poem, Do Not Lose Heart.
Do Not Lose Heart, right. So this poem, not to confuse, is part of Kondal Rao's article on destiny.
Very beautiful, because it reinforces that same statement. And he, before this, he writes that you can overcome karma knowing that you are a spark of the divine. And this poem is about you are what you think you are. So if you think you are divine, there's nothing that stops you from accomplishing anything. Very, very interestingly, in the same edition, Professor Kasturi has taken a small excerpt, a discourse excerpt from Swami, which only emphasizes the same message again. You know, in fact, the message there is that the sadhana that a sadhaka does has to be continuous to avoid tamas, because Swami says that tamas has a pull that is as strong as gravity on a pilgrim's progress. So therefore, don't waste time, don't simply sit still. If you sit still, time becomes a burden. So continuously engage yourself in sadhana and overcome tamas. It's like Swami saying, use tapas to overcome tamas. So this is a discourse excerpt. I don't know where, possibly it is possibly from that Venkatagiri place, or you don't know, because many discourses have gone unrecorded.
Right. Well, I think some of these are very similar to one of the discourses that Swami gave in Madras also. There was one on karma, bhakti and jnana. Mm. Some of the points were very similar about sadhana and about overcoming destiny. So possibly it's from there also, but there's no reference given. So that was one. And as always, there is one of the patient stories, I think pretty unremarkable in that sense. Mm. I mean, we are saying unremarkable because there is no Mahima Leela attached to it. It's a story of a patient coming, but again, this has to be seen in the context of the times, 1950s. Any such problem to any of these villagers around like this would have gone, there's no way to treat it. There's no way for them to take these patients anywhere. So it must have been a huge blessing, 1950s, to have the general hospital functioning and them having the ability to bring patients like this to a facility and get them treated. This was an enormous blessing. I mean, we can't think of it. We can't imagine it now, you know, in our times. But 1950s, now when you read it, it seems like a simple problem of...
It doesn't feel that simple also. There was a terrible complication. But we will take that up possibly after a quick short break. So don't go anywhere, listeners. We'll be back and we'll cover this.
Thank you.
Welcome back, dear listeners. Just before going into that break, we were talking about that case, General Hospital case. So Dr. V. Brahmam, I think Professor Kasturi had told him that every month I need one case. So he's giving these cases. Last time we saw about that case which had happened when Swami was in Rishikesh. This time it's a post-delivery eclampsia case wherein a 20-year-old on the 29th of October 1957, she delivered a child but after that became unconscious and began to get severe bouts of fits. And because of that, she had bit into her tongue. You know, while reading this only, I felt kind of goosebumps and, you know, horripilations of that. Because the doctor writes that she had bitten halfway into her tongue and they couldn't force open her mouth at all. It took hours to do that. And when they had done, the tongue had got extremely swollen, so much so that even giving liquids to the patient became tough. They had to put the patient on a saline drip, intravenous saline, along with 50% magnesium sulfate solution. So that was the severe case. The patient was totally unconscious and the temperature was around 102 to 104 degrees. Such a severe case, and while the patient is unconscious, they noticed that there was a lot of voiding of urine as well. So it was a very difficult patient and a difficult case, unconscious, 104 degrees temperatures, tongue swollen, no food going in, saline. At the same time, there was also edema in the extremities. In the sense, the hands, palms, the legs, they all got swollen. And we have to remember, this is a mother who has delivered a child just a day before. Must have been extremely difficult in 1958 to manage the 1957. But it is recorded that it took 10 days of continuous monitoring and treatment at the General Hospital, and the swelling reduced and the patient was discharged on the 13th of November. That is almost a fortnight after being admitted. And as always, the doctor concludes with deep gratitude and humble salutations to Swami. Really, I'm thinking it must have been such a challenging situation for these doctors, because 1956 the hospital has started functioning, and within 1 year you're getting such cases, and there's no other help available anywhere nearby. You only have to do it. And this is the case that has been documented. I think in a future edition of Sanatan Sarthi, a person writes of the General Hospital as Arogya Nilayam. So, you know, this is Prashantanilayam, where I think you are treated for your mental and psychological and spiritual problems. For your physical one, Swami has set up an Arogya Nilayam. That is indeed what it was.
Many discourses that Swami would give to the medical fraternity, Swami would often say this, that he is not very fond of this idea of specialization. Where, you know, in the name of specialization, your services become inaccessible to general patients and people who come with problems. You can imagine what it was, you know, in 1950s. I think there were two doctors or one doctor and one medical help, who probably as a nurse or something like that. And the variety of cases they had to look at. I mean, the reason I said that this is not a very complex case is not from the patient's point of view. From the patient's point of view, the pain and the suffering is definitely in the extreme. But now when we talk to some of the doctors in our super specialty hospital, be it Dr. Neelam Desai or Dr. Iyer, the kind of complexities they speak of, the doctors who come from the United States and the United Kingdom who come and serve in a hospital, they say that, oh, this is too complex. We don't deal with it in our hospitals, in our super specialty hospitals back home. So that's the amount of complexity which we speak of when we write of patient stories. Now, in that sense, I mean, it only goes to say that every delivery is such a huge hurdle to cross in those days, in 50s and 60s. There's no way. I mean, the previous edition we read that patient story where it took almost half a day for them to go back and get that patient in a bullock cart, and 24 hours of labor pains, and then not having delivered the twin completely. I mean, it's what a blessing it is, you know, more than Swami being here, as you said, Prashantanilayam. The Arogya Nilayam would have been a huge and perceivable blessing for all these villages around.
And with that, actually, the May 1958 Sanatan Sarthi, we come to a close. Of course, in the end, Professor Kasturi has written, you know, some kind of formal structure is coming in. There's a 3 rupee subscription for an 3 rupee subscription rate for annual subscription. So for 12 magazines, 3 rupees, which comes down to 25 paise per magazine. And he says that there will be no commercial ads in this. So a purely spiritual endeavor, untainted by any commercial things. So with that, we move on to June 1958 Sanatan Sarthi. I think once again, the same thing we notice here. The first two things are the two articles of Bhagwan. One on Prema Vahini, one the Sandeha Nivarini. And somehow the second Sandeha Nivarini, which Swami has written in the June 1958,
mm-hmm.
It's a lengthy article. That article alone covers up more than half of the Sanatan Sarthi. So with the two articles of Bhagwan, I think we are left with only 30-35% of the space. In that 35%, there are only three other things that are located. There is a brief, very brief description of Swami's Horsley Hills visit, which Swami visited from May 21st to 28th. Then there's an article called The Saint of Puttaparthi, a very general article on Swami.
Right. And this is the article where the Arogya Nilayam is mentioned, right,
yes,
which you so spoke of. Right.
Yeah. So it mentions about general things that happened during Shivratri. It's a general article. It has been written by an engineer. That's it. An engineer, a person who wishes to remain anonymous. And of course, there's a poem. So these are the three things which we will briefly go into, each of them possibly. A Horsley Hills visit, an article called The Saint of Puttaparthi, and a poem.
Right. And the Horsley Hills visit. This is a place where I think Swami has visited multiple times. Because when you read Satyam Shivam Sundaram, when you read Loving God, Professor Kasturi's autobiography, you will find a lot of mentions of Swami's visit to Horsley Hills. I think there was a devotee who, because of whom the government guest house in Horsley Hills was made accessible to Swami, mm-hmm. as mentioned by one of the devotees of the yesteryears. So that was the facility that Swami would use, take devotees, just like how Swami goes to Kodaikanal, Swami goes to Ooty in the later years. Swami would take a group of devotees to Horsley Hills. I think later Swami also used to go to Bandipur Forest with mm-hmm. Swami's students. So the Horsley Hills was one of those places that Swami visited from the 1950s. So this is one visit that Professor Kasturi writes about from the 21st to the 28th of May. So in the peak of summer, Swami chose to spend in the Horsley Hills.
Having been to Horsley Hills in the peak of summer, I can tell you that it's definitely 5 to 6 degrees lesser
mm-hmm.
than any other place. It's very cool, very beautiful place, and though it's named Horsley, it has not got nothing to do with any horse or anything.
Okay.
There's a British, I don't know, engineer or somebody whose name was Horsley.
Who must have discovered the hill station.
Discovered it as an ideal situation to build. And there are buildings from the British times. So the British were regular visitors to Horsley Hills during their summers. So the rich aristocratic British would go and enjoy their summer vacation there. So after this guy named Horsley who built it, it's built whatever there or discovered it, it's called Horsley Hills. Because for a lot of time I was thinking, why is it? In Karnataka, there's a place called Kudremukh.
Mm-hmm.
Kudre means horse. And literally the hill is shaped like the face of a horse.
Right.
So I was wondering whether something is there like that, but it's not Horsley. Because coming to think of it, if it had been that, then it would have had a Telugu name. It wouldn't be Horsley because nobody right. in Telugu will name it horse-shaped. So when Swami went there, he visited from the 21st of May till the 28th of May. And it was a very fruitful week, Professor Kasturi writes, and I'll just read out what he has written there. Every day was devoted to spiritual discussions and bhajans. Swami probed into the spiritual ideals and aspirations of everyone. He inquired about the religious studies of each person. He explained the significance of the Ishta Devata, meaning the deity of one's personal liking. Somebody likes Ganesha, somebody likes Jesus. So Swami explained the significance of the Ishta Devata for each and every person, asking them which is the Ishta Devata and giving an explanation by his lucid analysis and clear exposition. He solved all doubts and instilled faith, hope and courage. To the children in the camp, he taught prayers for both morning and evening to dedicate all their deeds to the Lord, asking to be punished for unworthy deeds and promising to strive always to remember the Lord. These three things always Swami emphasized even to us students. Swami would say, dedicate all your deeds to God. Second, don't ask God to forgive you be bold, face it and finish off the karma so that you don't have to face it in future births. And of course, remember God always. In fact, Swami says, in two things to remember and two things to forget, two things to always remember, Swami says, don't forget that ultimately death is the end for everyone, and don't forget God. These are the things that you should not forget, Swami says. When he says two things that you should not remember, two things you should not forget, these are two things you should not forget. So that is what Swami emphasized to the children, and this is the brief that Professor Kasturi has recorded about the visit to Horsley Hills.
There's another article, I think, in Satyam Shrim Sundaram Swami Kasturi mentions, because he doesn't mention exactly it's this one, but from the description that he gives, it seems like it must have been around the same trip.
Uh-huh.
Where in the chapter where he writes about the various materializations that Swami would do, he says in that, during one of these Horsley Hills trip, where he says that, I mean, again, looks like a regular materialization of Swami, given the number of materializations that Swami would do at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, he says this. There was a period where Swami stayed there for 1 week, and every day Swami would give discourses, and Swami spoke about these kind of topics. So one of those days, Swami picked up a stone while he was walking towards that. Apparently, there was one a clearing in the forest or in the hill where Swami used to sit every day. So Swami picks up one stone, which he says looks like a macaroni. I don't know whether macaronis were popular even then, or a macaron or something like that. It's a kind of a stone
shell
shaping or something like that. So he says that Swami picks up one, and Swami puts it in front of him and gives the discourse of that day. And at the end of it, Swami picks it up, and it has become a sugar candy. And he starts distributing it, and he says the beautiful thing is the shape remains the same. The shape and the way it was. And what is very interesting is he says that sugar crystals never form like that. It looks like the stone as it was, every atom has become sweet. And so that was one of the very beautiful episodes that he narrates. As I was saying, that Swami has made so many visits to Horsley Hills, it is difficult to say if it was the same occasion. That was one episode that probably happened around the same time.
You know, when I read all this, what gets me very thrilled is, say, Harshi, which is near Pune. It has become a big pilgrimage spot now, Panduranga Kshetra. There's a Panduranga temple. Swami, from October 27th, I think, October 27th or 28th in 2009, for 3 days Swami was there. And for 3 days that Swami spent there, it has become a pilgrimage place. And then we read about Swami having visited Horsley Hills a dozen times. And here in this one time itself, Swami has spent a week there.
A week.
You know, it just inspires me and motivates me. I'm just waiting. Let this COVID lockdown get over. Just go to Horsley. It's hardly an hour's drive. I feel
close
these
to Madanpally,
are all,
right?
On the route to Madanpally, the road is quite good. Possibly it'll take 1.5 hours. But I think many times, you know, when devotees come to Prashanthi Nilayam, especially the new ones, you know, before, when we come to Puttaparthi, we go to Mandir, morning, evening, we spend. People, nowadays, because of the mentality and it's a fast-paced world, people find what else is there to do in Puttaparthi. That's why we come to Puttaparthi for 2 days, 3 days. But I just think one day we can keep aside for visiting Uravakonda. One day go to Bukapatnam and Kamalapuram. One day Kamalapuram. One day Puttaparthi itself. One day Horsley Hills. Just all these places, when Swami in the 1940s and 50s, he would travel so much. I think just traveling these places and imbibing would be such a great thrill. You know, because when we read about Rama went to a place, Krishna went to a place, we just go by our faith. You know, we don't know whether Rama actually went there. But here we have records that Swami has been to Horsley Hills. Definitely, I think it, at least in me, it arouses a great interest that I must visit Horsley Hills. I've gone already once, but I want to go once more, twice more. Just spend time and nice and wherever Swami
I think
has
we
been.
Should quickly read up all the Horsley Hills episodes. There
Correct.
Must be a bunch of them.
Yes.
And then make a quick trip and that'll be
and
wonderful.
Locate those places.
Right.
Possibly, you know, maybe once the lockdown gets over, we will do that and we can run it as a special on our channel on
right,
YouTube.
Absolutely. So as Arvind was saying, that there are only three articles in this particular issue. One is what we just covered, that very small brief account of Swami's visit to Horsley Hills in the May of 1958. And there is a very interesting poem. 1958 is quite early And this is a poem by a devotee from Argentina by name Mamita. We'll come to the name, but we'll just read through this very short poem that she has contributed to the Sanatan Sarthi. It goes thus. Ah, who and what art thou, radiant dream? A presence and yet a spirit eternal. Oft like a child, brimful of impish gaiety, luring one and all with thy haunting ways. Sacred and dearly loved, we stoop low before thy holy feet, so delicately cast, as if made to tread lightly over tired hearts, to tune the hidden melody of the soul, forgotten and rapt worldly thoughts. Thou comest to trick the golden key, long rusty in its forgotten sanctuary.
Wow.
Very, very beautiful, no? Very beautifully written, saying that, looking at Swami's feet while bowing down, saying that it is so tender, almost like because it has got to tread on delicate hearts, you know, wounded, delicate hearts, tired hearts, she says. And then she says, it's like you've come to discover a key that we have lost, you know, the key to the heart, because none of us are really bothered about opening the depths of the heart. You've come to long rusty in the forgotten sanctuary.
Now, honestly speaking, in my limited opinion, so far in the Sanatan Sarthis, we have seen this is the first poem kind of, you know, because a poem should have some kind of words which are archaic, and that's how I think of it. So it feels like a very beautiful poem from a literary point of view also, and definitely the content, like all of the poems, is invaluable.
And now coming to the name, Mamita, it doesn't seem a Latin American name in any stretch of imagination. And interestingly, going back to the tar name that you spoke about, this is a name given by Swami. This is not the devotee's name, actually. So Swami would call this devotee as Mamita or Mamina or something like that, very endearingly. And that's why she has also signed it
in
Mamita
quotes.
In quotes, right? Okay. So apparently this devotee's name is actually, I'll try to read it out, Adelina del Caril de Guraldes. Right, so she was one of the very early sadhakas, you could say, from Argentina, who came to India in search of a spiritual journey.
From Argentina,
right?
My God!
So she is, and she came in the early 1940s, and she got to know some princes of the royal families in India who brought her to Swami. So this must have been the Mysore or Sandur or one of these royal families that we've spoken about, and that's how she came to Swami in the early 1940s itself. So there are records of Swami having written letters to her in the 1940s. So one thing is Swami writing letters, and it is written in such beautiful English.
Wow.
So beautiful. And so, in fact, there is one letter I got a printout of that. This was a letter I think Swami wrote a little later, maybe in the mid-1950s. I think we should just read it out. It's so very beautiful. And the handwriting actually is very, very crisp. Even when, of course, Swami's handwriting is always beautiful, this probably is one of the earliest handwritings of Swami in English. And just
cursive
to,
English.
Right, cursive handwriting. I'll just read out this. Some of the portions are eternal as always. So Swami writes like this. He says, "Dearest Mamita and Ramu." Her husband's name, by the name, was Guraldes.
Ramu. Right.
So Swami has made it Ricardo Guraldes.
Shortened it. Ramu.
Made it Ramu. So Swami writes, "Dear Mamita and Ramu." Swami is saying, I'm getting the first one. Your cares and burdens. Yeah. Feeling all your cares and burdens, do not be doubtful about your path. For the path wakes up itself, render the dancing steps of freedom. I don't know, I think it's a quote or a poem that Swami has written in the first four lines. Then Swami writes, this is directly addressed to them, "I am happy to receive all your letters. You had written to me saying that you were going to Bombay, and so I had not written to you for all these days." Swami writes, "Wherever and whatever you may be, in your moments of suffering and joy alike, you think of me. I know. you too know that I am always with you as the life of your life. I am aware of the sufferings you are undergoing, not due to any sins or mistakes of yours, but due to the inhumanness of the humanity amidst which you are living. I make my beloved ones tread the path of suffering to reach me.
Wow.
Well, Mamita, in a way, I am sorry to know that you are leaving for your country. You have left your people, your wealth, you have left your people, your wealth, and everything, and come down to India in search of the path that leads you to God. You have left the material wealth to know the spiritual one, and have come down to India. But I'm afraid India has given you less than what you deserve. And now you are returning to your country, your dreams half realized and half broken. Yes, Mamita, I too want to see you before you leave India. Let me know when you intend leaving for your country so that I may come down to Bangalore to give you darshan and bless you. With peace, with blessings to you and Ramu.
Wow.
What a sweet letter, so personal, and at the same time, you know, acknowledging the suffering what the devotee must be going through. And of course, the blessing is eternal. Swami says, I know that you're thinking of me, and you also know that I'm always with you wherever you are.
Really, so beautiful. You know, God knows how many such people. Now, this Mamita happened to get published in Sadhan Sarthi, and so we get to know how many would go unnoticed.
Right. And there's so many. Actually, one of the earliest letters is 1949. This is documented as part of Swami's mission in Argentina. So she's recognized as one of the first devotees from Argentina to come. And that's what she had, you know, when she encountered Baba for the first time, she realized that here was the one of whom the epic scriptures have been written. So she had translated a lot of scriptures and must be the Ramayana and all of that.
So is this an article on our site?
Right, it's an article on our site. The Sai movement in Argentina, I think in there, this letter and her early interactions with Swami is just mentioned in a very brief.
So there you have it, dear listeners. If you wish to read more about Mamita, and you know, this is the treasure that we are talking about, that we will unearth when we read the Sanatan Sarthi. We get to make connections and see things which are so beautiful. So there is this article by the name Sai Movement in Argentina. You just have to go to any search engine and search with this term, Sai Movement in Argentina, and possibly put the key term Radio Sai as well along with it. So it will throw up this article and you can read more about the movement there and how it began with this and how it has been personally nurtured and, you know, nourished by Bhagwan. So beautiful of Swami when he writes that, I think India has not given you enough. In it is also a message that why are you leaving possibly that you stay back here. Don't. It's very, very profound and powerful, because Prem, personally in my own life, I'm sure everybody faces it, where we have had these moments where we feel extreme fulfillment and we realize that the world is ephemeral, Swami is permanent. With that in our mind, we take up service activities, we take up careers, professions, whatever. But there are those moments when, because we have a mind with us, which looks at people who are possibly more prosperous or people who seem to have more than us in any other worldly manner, and we might get into a doubt, is it that have I taken a wrong step, or have I taken a step where I should not have done this much, possibly I could have indulged a little bit more in the world. So what Swami writes to Mamita there is like a constant reminder to all of us as well, that how much ever alluring and attractive the world might appear, how much ever boring or unproductive and unprogressive the spiritual path might appear, don't ever give up the spiritual path for the worldly one. That message comes out very strongly and very, like on my face, because when Swami is writing there, I just feel it's a roundabout way of writing, why are you leaving India? Don't stay here. But well, if you have already made up your mind, I will still comment. That shows his compassion.
Absolutely.
And
I mean, the way Swami writes, you know, you've come with dreams and you're leaving half realized and half unfulfilled. So what do you place your life decisions on? Are you going to place it on what you have found fulfillment in, or what you're going to be, what disappointments you have faced? I think that's the definition. And as you rightly said, I think our journey with Swami is also like that. Each one of us will have a list of disappointments. Oh, Swami did not speak to me. I did not become a student of Swami. Or I did not get that interview. Or I didn't see Swami.
I didn't get dreams.
I didn't get a darshan of Swami. I didn't get dreams of Swami. Or you can have the list of achievements. I have found Swami. What more is there, right? It's a one-line list, you could say. That, because nothing more is comparable to that greatest blessing that you have come to see Swami, you have come to discover Swami. And what will you base your rest of your life choices on? I think that's the question that Swami is leaving all of us with, that beautiful letter.
Once again, in the same issue, there is again Professor Kasturi highlighting how to subscribe for Sthana and Sarthi. Whenever we come up with any new channel, new video, in all forms, Facebook, social media, Instagram, Twitter, through our radio programs, Radio Sai, everywhere we keep bombarding. I think those times the only way of communication was once a month through Sthana and Sarthi. So till it gets into the people's mindset, I think, how to subscribe and what are the kinds of articles will be accepted. Once again, Professor Kasturi reiterates in the June 1958 issue. And as I said, there's that one article called Saint of Puttaparthi.
Right. I think it is written by a person, an engineer devotee, right?
An engineer
no
devotee.
Name is anonymous. Written, anonymous.
And it just shows that on one hand you have people like Mamita writing a poem where he says that, that's it, you know, your feet should trod on my heart. And you have a person here writing about the saint of Puttaparthi, you know. Swami has not yet achieved avatarhood. And it has got into Sanatan Sarthi.
Right.
I mean, I don't think in the official Sathya Sai page or anywhere I can write about the saint of Puttaparthi any longer, because now that's it. That is the official status. He's the official avatar. You
right.
can't...
The article itself concludes by him saying that undoubtedly he is the avatar Purusha of the age.
Yes.
But nevertheless, I mean, when you first read the title and the first few lines, it feels a little inappropriate in that sense.
And Swami has allowed it, and right. it has passed through the editorial check. It's amazing. It shows, it only inspires us to be much, so much more open, so much more broad, so much more accepting. Not to draw narrow boundaries, narrow restrictions, because God is like that. That's how Swami has always been, welcoming all, ready for all. I mean, even though he knows that you're doing something wrong, he won't tell that you're doing wrong, you'll be doomed. No, he'll encourage you so that you learn on your own that you're wrong. And then when you repent and you feel that you did a wrong and you come back, again, once again, welcome you back with open arms, just here as he had done the first time, he will do the second time, he will do the third time, he'll do infinite number of times. Isn't that the reason why we have pledged our hearts to him? Because whatever we may do, however wrong we may go, we know for sure that the whole world may desert us, but not Swami. On that note, dear listeners, I think we have completed the June 1958 edition. The next fortnight, we will go back to conversations with Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba. After that, again, we will start back from the July 1958. So till then, have a lovely week ahead. Let us keep thinking of Swami. Let our love for him keep growing every moment. And day after tomorrow, that is Saturday, we have the live video satsang from at 7 p.m. Indian Standard Time, and the theme is related to how do we measure our spiritual progress. For those of our regular and loyal listeners from years, this is a theme that we had covered in great detail in the afternoon satsang, but with a lot more inputs from Bhagwan discourses, we will have the pleasure of having a satsang, Prem and myself, on Saturday. So you're welcome to be there. And as always, anything, any your thoughts, your feedback, you can write to us at listener@radiosai.org. Thank you. We will end with a song, and on the other side of it, you will be greeted by Brother Chandu. So till then, Jai Sai Ram.
అరుణ అరుణ క్రాంతుల చిందే అరుణ అరుణ క్రాంతుల చిందే
మందస్మిత వదనారవింద
మందస్మిత వదనారవింద
అరుణ అరుణ క్రాంతుల చిందే
ప్రేమను ప్రేమతో ముదముగ పెంచి
ప్రేమను ప్రేమతో ముదముగ పెంచి
ప్రేమ నీరు చిలకించి
ప్రేమను ప్రేమతో ముదముగ పెంచి ప్రేమ నీరు చిలకించి
ప్రేమానందమున ముంచి ప్రేమమూర్తులుగా చేసి అరుణ అరుణ క్రాంతుల చిందే అరుణ అరుణ క్రాంతుల చిందే
మందస్మిత వదనారవింద స్మిత వదనారవింద
అరుణ అరుణ క్రాంతుల చిందే
సంగీత సంగతులని
త్రూపొందించే దాతవు నీవే
గీత సంగీత సంగతులని
రూపొందించే దాతవు
రాగములోన జీవము నీవే
భావములోన ప్రాణము నీవే
అరుణ అరుణ క్రాంతుల చిందే అరుణ అరుణ క్రాంతుల చిందే
మందస్మిత వదనారవింద
మందస్మిత వదనారవింద
అరుణ అరుణ క్రాంతుల చిందే